Switching our conversation now to Apple Computers and Accessories with Joe Rhodes. Joe, a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. Really pleased to have him with us today. And certainly he's here to answer your questions about Apple Computers and the accessories that come with those Apple Computers. If you have one, I hope you'll join in, or have a question, I hope you'll join in, or maybe a comment at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@WPR.org, and we'd love to hear from you. And Joe, welcome back.
Hey, glad to be here.
You know, Apple kind of bucked the trend here, the fall off in consumer spending, didn't it? I see they had strong sales in both computers and their iPhones.
Yeah, you know, Apple's been doing really, really well. Excuse me. Even with the general computer market kind of shrinking, and I think it speaks to how strong their product line really is, kind of makes you wonder what their sales would be if we weren't in the middle of a recession.
Yeah, you sure wonder that. I wonder, as Macintosh, as the computers and so forth get more popular, is that going to cause more hackers out there and more people to go in there and try and foul up the computers?
Yes, it absolutely is, because as the target becomes more appealing, more people are going to start taking shots at it. Right now, the Mac is small enough in terms of market share that if you want to become a big famous hacker, or if you're a crime syndicate and you're trying to steal credit cards, you're going to go after the big, plump, juicy target that's got 90% of the market, not the little Mac that's only got 10%. Having said that, there recently was an exploit that did show up in the Mac world, and it's one that's very easy to avoid. It was Apple introduced a new version of their iWork suite, which includes Pages and Numbers and Keynote. They're great applications. I use them and I love them. But you're supposed to go buy them from Apple. Well, people have found a way to put it up on file sharing sites so that you can download it illegally for free. Well, it didn't take long before somebody figured out how to insert a virus into these what's called pirated copies of the software. They're not legal. Well, someone injected a virus into this one. So people who are out there trying to get an illegal copy of this program and they're running the installer are also installing a virus on their computer. So and this goes for Mac or PC. You just shouldn't pirate software. It's just not worth it. If the deal seems too good to be true, it probably is.
Probably is, yeah.
And you just always want to make sure that you're getting your software from a source that is reputable. There is free software out there, but it's designed to be free. It's meant to be free, and you still have to check it out and make sure that you're getting it from the correct source, check out its reputation. But if you're getting something like Photoshop or iWork or Microsoft Word, and you're getting it, you know, from the equivalent of some guy in a trench coat on a street corner, probably not a good idea.
Not a good idea. Well, I assume that Apple's thinking about this and that they're doing all they can up front to kind of keep just within their own product line problems from developing.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And in macOS 10.5, Apple actually introduced a couple of new security protocols that make it significantly more difficult to hack, you know, unannounced, hack your machine. And they've also done a number of things where they can tag files that you download from the internet, so that the first time you run them, it'll actually ask you, for example, if you download an application off, I'm just going to say Google. I don't know that Google puts out too many applications, but a little window will pop up and say, hey, this application was downloaded off the internet from the website google.com. Did you really want to run it? So that way, if you download something you didn't intend to or it was kind of by mistake, you get a message right away and you can kind of compare, okay, yes, I really did get this from Google. Yes, I really want to run it. Yes, it's okay. If it's a surprise, you at least have the option to say no right off the bat. But ultimately, computers are very powerful tools. They're very open, and Apple does the best job they possibly can. So does Microsoft, in all fairness. Yeah. But at some point, it's very difficult to protect a user from themselves. you wouldn't want to buy a computer that you couldn't install software on, and as long as you have that option, you have the option of downloading something that's going to cause a problem, and yeah, that's what you get.
Gotcha. Bill in Wausau, we'll give you a chance. Bill, hello.
Hi, Bill.
Well, thank you for taking my call. We have an iBook that just turned 3 years old this Christmas, and it's been really wonderful. We love it. We're volunteering on a project to help build a website for a nonprofit group, and we don't know anything about it, so we're kind of going through this whole thing, loading pictures onto this computer.
Okay.
And And I did something, loading pictures on and trying to transfer them to a disk that would work on a PC, according to the instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And now what happens whenever I go into the photography program, the iPhoto, it does the first thing I want to do, but then after that it kind of locks up and that colored disk spins at the top of the picture.
Mm.
And I don't know what I can do with that. Then I have another question if you can help me with this. I'm afraid I might have to take it in and have somebody unravel this for me, but is there anything simple I can do with this?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what might be causing iPhoto to lock up, but let me ask you, you want to get these pictures out of iPhoto and onto a disk that you can hand off to a PC user, correct?
Right, and I saw something in the instructions of how to do that, and I did some steps, and a friend of mine said I really didn't have to do that. I could just transfer the files to a CD and or onto a thumb drive, and
sure.
That would work too. I think I did something I didn't need to do.
Well, let me give you the simplest possible way of doing this,
okay.
And hopefully this will work for you. In iPhoto, you click on all the pictures that you're interested in. And there's a couple ways of selecting photos in iPhoto, and if you're not sure, if you hold down the Shift key, you can click the first one and the last one. It'll select everything in between.
Yes.
If you hold down the Apple key, you can just cherry pick which individual pictures you want.
Okay.
So you've got the pictures you want highlighted. You click on any one of them and start dragging it over towards your desktop or your thumb drive or your CD, and it will make a copy of those pictures in just a normal picture format wherever it is that you drag them to. So
okay.
that is the easiest and simplest way of getting just plain old pictures out of iPhoto and off into your computer somewhere. And like I said, if you drag them to your thumb drive or you drag them to your CD, they'll just land on the CD, and then you can burn that CD, and they'll to a Windows computer, you'll just see a whole list of pictures. Nothing fancy, just what you want, just the raw pictures. So
okay.
I'd give that a try because it sounds like, I don't know what steps you're going through, but it's possible that maybe you're going through something you don't necessarily need to. And maybe if we don't have to go through that step, you can avoid that spinny wheel of death.
Okay.
That's the technical term, spinny wheel of death.
Yes, exactly. That's how it feels to me, too. my other question is, being 3 years old, is it worth upgrading the RAM? This has 1.5, what gigs is it, or megs of RAM? And I think I can add another 512 or something. And would it be worthwhile upgrading to the newer operating system or the newer software package?
Well, you know, it depends on how long you want to hold on to this machine. 1.5 gigabytes of RAM is a pretty reasonable amount of RAM to have these days. And I'm assuming you're probably running macOS 10.4?
I think so, yes.
Okay, which is pretty reasonable, pretty competent. And, you know, it all depends on what you're trying to do. If the machine is fine running, doing what you want it to do right now, there's really no reason to run out and upgrade it.
Uh-huh.
If you were interested in using the newest version of iLife, and I don't know off the top of my head if that requires macOS 10.5 or not. Hopefully someone will be able to call in and refresh my memory on that one. But there's certain pieces of software that have to have a minimum operating system. Like in some cases, it might require macOS 10.5. And if that's the case, then you do want to put an upgraded operating system because you have this other tool you want to use. But if you're happy with the tools you have, and you know, I think that machine is pretty capable. 1.5 gigs of RAM is probably a good amount for what you have there. I would actually save that money, and at some point when you decide to get a new computer, you'll get macOS 10.5 and more memory and the newest applications
right.
and all that. So I'd be tempted to say, you know, save your money and put it into a new machine when it becomes appropriate.
And good luck, Bill. Thank you very much for calling. Eric in Oshkosh, we're on to you now. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
When I boot my Mac up, I have a bunch of programs set to automatically open up.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do, they open up in the location I want them to open up, but they're the wrong sizes. Is there a way to reset it so they open up the right size?
So when you say they're opening up in locations you want and sizes, you're talking about the windows that first show up?
Yes.
That's going to vary on from one application to the next. And I've never really found a great way to dictate what size a window will open up for any particular application. Usually, the applications are supposed to open up with the same size and location as they were last closed down in,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't always take effect. It's kind of a gentleman's agreement. There's nothing that forces it, but applications are supposed to open up in the same size and location that they were closed down in. But like I said, there's nothing that enforces that.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And Kurt in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Kurt.
Oh, gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Good.
Doing well.
Here's my situation. I'm going to be migrating from a PC to a Mac and using an audio sampling program. The problem is I've got all the legacy stuff that is on PCI cards. Now, I understand that a Power Mac G5 is the last of the Macs that use PCI slots. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. What was the sort of ultimate configuration of the G5? If I'm going to be looking for a used one, what kind of speed and what kind of RAM capacity was sort of the ultimate G5?
Sure. Well, the first thing you want to check is make sure that these PCI cards are indeed Mac compatible.
They are. They're M audio, okay. And they can be used.
Excellent.
Either PC or Mac.
Excellent. Probably the best you'll get, they've got a dual-core, dual-processor G5. I think it was at 2.5 gigahertz, and you can put a maximum of 8 gigs of RAM in there. And that'll be the biggest, baddest machine of a G5 you can get.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Joe Rhodes, our guest today, as we talk Apple computers and accessories here on the Ideas Network. It's on our mind today, Apple computers and accessories. Joe Rhodes, the guest. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Joe's a self-employed Macintosh support specialist, works out of Madison, has a website, and give us that website, Joe, will you?
It's joerhodes.com/WPR. My name is actually spelled R-H-O-D-E-S, because that always seems to be some confusion.
All right. But, yeah. So joerhodes.com and go to and then add a /WPR, and you'll get all the information you need there. And certainly if you have a question, I hope you'll join in and call us. Renee in Appleton is online already with a question here. So let's just go right to the phones and to Renee. Renee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for being there. Mm-hmm. I have a quick question. I have my personal computer at home is a Mac, and I recently went back to school, and mm-hmm. I'm actually learning the Windows programs. And so I had to purchase Windows XP, Excel, like the Office programs, and mm-hmm. I also purchased the Mac Parallels.
Okay.
And I'm having some trouble trying to figure out the shortcuts and some of the differences that are popping up, where if I'm going to be testing out on this in the school computers, they're going to show me a little bit different things like right-clicking and left-clicking. And I'm wondering if there's any place where I can go to get some additional help on that.
Yes, as a matter of fact, there is. And it's a little interesting because Parallels is sharing a keyboard with your Mac, and sometimes the keyboards and the keys don't always line up. What you'd like to do is go to Parallels' website, and if you go into the forums, you'll very quickly find out how you can, for example, set up the right-click if it's not by default so that when you right-click on your Mac, you automatically get the right-click in the Windows environment. So you can kind of start to get those things to kind of sync up with what Windows is designed to operate as.
Okay.
The other thing is if you Google around for it, you'll find it very quick. If you Google for Parallels, right-click, or second click, something like that, you'll get an answer almost immediately. Because I know I ran into that same thing, and it took me just a second of head-scratching to figure out what was going on. Also, in the Parallels preferences, there should be some settings where you can adjust which keys map to their Windows equivalent. So on your Mac, you probably have a set of F keys, and depending upon how new your Mac is, sometimes there's a key for, say, turning the volume up or the down or going into Exposé or things like that. When really what you want in the Windows environment is you want function 5 or function 6.
Okay.
And the answer is you have to go into System Preferences in the Mac OS X side and turn those special features off. And I believe that's in the keyboard and mouse section of System Preferences. And then once they're released from there, Parallels can then use them as regular function keys in your Windows program. So when you hit F5, Excel will do whatever Excel is supposed to do when you hit F5.
Okay.
So then does that automatically mean that when the Parallels desktop is turned off and I'm back just on my Mac, it's going to just be the Mac keyboard as usual?
Well, when you turn off the special keys in the System Preferences, they're turned off across the board. Okay, so for example, let's say the volume up and the volume down keys, because those were on practically every Mac laptop for quite a while. I'm assuming you've got a laptop here, correct?
It's actually a desktop.
Desktop, okay. But the keyboard is very similar. The function keys that you hit, that's a function of Mac OS X. So if you turn those off, basically what you do is you switch it so that you have to press a modifier key to use the volume up, volume down, expose, things like that. So that when you just press the key, you get the normal function key. But then when you press the special modifier key, then it will operate what the little icon says it will. So that happens whether Parallels is running or not.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Renee. Jamie in Green Bay, hi to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have MacBook OS 10.5. I just got it about 6 months ago. And since I bought a printer to print things with my computer, I've noticed a message that pops up on my screen, and I think it has to do with the printer. The message says, the application login server quit unexpectedly. Mac OS 10 and other applications are not affected. And then it says you can send a report to Apple or look at more details or whatever. I've sent a report to Apple, and I don't know how many times I've sent it. They're probably sick of seeing the message come in. I don't know what happens when you send a message. But I have looked at the report, and it does mention that printer in the process in the past. It mentions the printer.
Mm-hmm.
How can I get that to stop popping up every time I turn the computer on?
Okay. Let me ask you this. Can you still print okay, even when that comes up? All right. My hunch is, and I don't know exactly, but I'm not familiar with a process called login server. But my first reaction would be, it sounds like there's a little bit of software that when you installed your printer, that it installs this little piece of software probably called login server, so that when you log in, it can do something with that printer automatically for you.
Okay.
And that's probably what that is. And for whatever reason, that little bit of software is crashing. So two things I would do. First off, make sure that your macOS 10 installation is as up-to-date as possible. So you go under the Apple menu and say software update, and you basically follow the prompts and make sure that you're up to the most recent. I think the most recent version, if I'm not mistaken, is 10.5.6.
Yeah, that's what I have.
Perfect. The next thing I would do is I would check the manufacturer's website for your printer and see if perhaps they have an updated driver, because chances are you're not the only person that's run into this. So, for example, if it's a Hewlett-Packard, you would go to HP's website and see if they've got just download the most newest, latest, and greatest version of their printer driver, and then try installing that. So hopefully that will correct whatever little bug they were running into, that this login server keeps crashing. Hopefully they've fixed that, and you won't have that anymore.
Okay.
Makes sense.
I have the USB port that connects the printer to the computer, and it's hardly ever connected to that printer. Could that be throwing it?
I wouldn't expect it to. I mean, any good printer driver is going to know that the printer won't always be plugged in.
Okay.
So I would expect more than anything, it's probably just a bug, maybe an older version of the driver that doesn't run quite well under 10.5.6, and hopefully the printer manufacturer has corrected that and will have some newer software that will take care of it.
Okay.
Super. Thanks for your help.
Thanks for calling, Jeannie. Rich in Hudson emailed to say, I think it's important to note the distinction between a virus and a Trojan. There are no Mac viruses. Joe was talking about at the top of the show is a Trojan, and any type of computer and any operating system ever made will always be susceptible to Trojans.
Rich, you are absolutely right. Technically, this is not a virus, although sometimes people just use virus as a general term because malware just doesn't sound very nice. A Trojan is a piece of software that looks like it could be useful, and so it deceives you into installing it, so you actually do the action, but then it turns out it's not helpful, it's not what it was billed as, it's actually something nefarious. A virus is something that installs itself on your computer for you without you having to do any work.
Now,
so technically, the piece of software I was talking about, it absolutely is a Trojan, but you know, that's at this point, when once you have it on your computer, it's irrelevant. It's just something nasty that you don't want on there. So I kind of use virus as a catch-all term sometimes.
Leslie in Preston, Minnesota, we're on to you now. Hi.
Hi, Joe. Boy, this is perfect timing.
Hi, Leslie.
My daughter goes to college for a computer, like graphic arts type program, and she has to buy a big program, a CS4. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes, I am very familiar with that, with a lot of my clients use it.
Okay, well, she has a PC, so she was now tomorrow going to be buying a Mac, and I just talked to her this morning, and they told her that she can get a Mac computer, but it would need a lot more memory.
Mm-hmm.
She has to buy like 2 more gigs of memory to run this program, and I'm just wondering, is it smart to buy the extra memory like that, or is it smart to buy a computer that has the memory in it in the first place?
Sure. If you're buying a new Mac, most of them, and I'm going from my brain here, most of them ship with at least 2 gigabytes of RAM, and I think now that most of the mid-level to high-end Macs all come with 4. CS4, Adobe Creative Suite 4, is a suite of programs that includes Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign, a whole bunch of really high-end production tools. And mm-hmm. I don't know what their minimum system requirements are, but it probably is around 2 gigs or so. But having said that, the minimum is not going to be very comfortable to work with. So having 4 gigs of RAM on a Mac, if you're going to be doing anything serious, especially like Photoshop or Illustrator, it's a really good thing. The nice thing is it's not very expensive. Memory is really inexpensive. And adding it to the machine is really no different after the fact than having Apple install it right off the bat. What I will tell you, my personal opinion, I think Apple charges way too much for their memory upgrades.
Uh-huh.
So I would, if the computer you're looking at only comes with 2 gigabytes, I would look into how much it would cost at a third party to buy additional memory, to buy 4 gigabytes and put it in yourself, because typically it's very easy to install memory into a Macintosh.
Okay, that's what they advised her, not to go with the Mac brand, but they had some off-brand that was like half the price.
Yeah, it's really amazing, and I'm sure there's a reason why Apple's memory is so expensive. My understanding is they put it through a lot more testing and things like that, but in my experience, third-party RAM, it's kind of like a light bulb. Either it works or it doesn't, and you know right away.
Okay.
So I've... You know, there is occasion where you get a bad chip, but for the most part, I've had pretty good luck with third-party RAM, but the price difference is definitely worth it.
All right.
Okay, so that answers my question. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Jenna in Waukesha says, is it true that Macs without the Intel chip have compatibility issues with the CS3 suite? I have a PowerBook G4 17 that runs extremely slow. Would this be related to the program, or could it be another issue?
Well, the biggest issue is the G4 chip in the PowerBooks. The G4 chip just didn't quite keep up with everybody else towards the end of its life. So even the high-end PowerBook G4s, the fastest one you could get, they just weren't as fast as everybody wanted them to be. Creative Suite 3 runs on both platforms. There are what you're talking about, though, is there are some applications that are included with it that simply won't run on a PowerPC. And usually I think they're the movie programs. Adobe basically looked at it and said even the fastest G5 just isn't going to have enough horsepower, so we're going to restrict it to the Intel platform or better, because the PowerPC just didn't have enough horsepower at the end of its life to run those particular applications. But really, again, getting back to memory, I would look at getting as much memory into that machine as you can. Unfortunately, I think for that machine, the max is 2 gigabytes. So if you don't have 2 gigabytes, go put 2 gigabytes in. That'll help some.
David in Viroqua, on to you now. Hi, David.
Howdy. I just had a question about transferring music from a Mac, from iTunes, to a PC. My daughter has the music on our Mac at home, and she wants it on a PC laptop that she has used for school.
Sure.
And I wasn't able to do it.
Sure. The trickiest part of that whole operation, Apple actually does make that possible. And I think on their support website, they'll even give you instructions on how to do it.
Okay.
You basically pick up the entire iTunes music library, and it's all going to be in one giant folder. You pick it up and you move it onto the other computer. And they have instructions for going, I believe they have instructions for going from Mac to PC and PC to Mac. The trickiest part, though, is getting the two computers to be able to see each other. Because you're going to have, you know, all of this data, you somehow have to create a bridge between the two platforms. The easiest solution I can think of would be is if you have an external hard drive. You could copy the entire music library onto the external hard drive on the Mac, then connect it on the PC, and then transfer it back over to the PC. That'd probably be the most simple way to do it. Just make sure when you start this, make sure that both computers can see the hard drive before you start copying all your files.
Okay. And a hard drive would be some external device, not another computer. It'd be something you'd go buy.
Right. No, it's an external device. You can probably pick one up for about $100 or less, depending upon how big it is you want them to be. I'm assuming you've got a fairly recent Mac?
2 to 3 years old, I forget.
2 to 3 years old. So you'll probably be okay if you get a USB external hard drive, and that should work on both platforms. The trick is you want to make sure that it's formatted for the PC, because the Mac can speak PC, the PC cannot speak Mac.
I see.
So that's why I want before you get going, make sure you plug it into both machines and make sure that both machines will register it and see it and be able to work with it.
Okay, and it's printing CDs, data CDs isn't going to work.
I think you're going to find that to be, depending upon how much music you have, that could be very laborious.
Okay. We did try that in a rather laborious
way. Yeah. A CD holds 650 megabytes, and, you know, it's very easy for your iTunes library to stretch into the tens of gigabytes.
Okay.
So you'd be talking about, you know, 20, 30, 50 CDs really quick.
Yeah, we had several, and they evidently didn't load up on my daughter's computer, so I failed her once again.
No, you just haven't succeeded yet.
So,
check out Apple's website, and they'll give you instructions on how to do the actual particulars of moving the library.
Angeline lives in the Madison area and would like to replace her still-functioning eMac Canon scanner and printer with a new iMac. Where can I donate or recycle these in the Madison area?
Ooh, you know, this is a really good question, and I know there are great places and schools that would love to have that eMac. I just don't know exactly who you contact about it. Those eMacs are actually pretty good machines. They still have some life left in them for people that just need to do basic stuff. So short of, you know, one option is you could check Craigslist and just say, hey, I've got this older eMac. If somebody wants their first computer and wants to get online and get some email and surf the web, it's a great machine for that. You're not going to be editing movies on the thing anymore. I'm sure you've run into that. But so I would, if you want to try the hassle, you can try Craigslist. Otherwise, I'm not sure. I know that nonprofits would be happy to get it. I just don't know how to coordinate
that.
Sure,
some of the nonprofit, some of the schools.
Schools and daycares and things like that. That would be a perfect machine for little kids to play games on.
So look around your neighborhood and just see what schools in your neighborhood, what daycares in your neighborhood. And
maybe
just
a community center, something like that. Or maybe a shelter or a work development program for people who are out of school or out of work and trying to learn how to use these things.
So those are the choices, and there's some pretty good ones out there. You'll probably be happy with what you find. Donald in Columbus, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Boy, good to acknowledge here that there's something other than Microsoft and PC in the world, you know. Great show. I have a question. I've got a new iMac, and I've got a G4.
Okay.
I want them to talk to each other.
Sure.
I understand there's a T mode or target mode or something when you hook them up with a USB, and I've tried this a few times, got it to work, but then other times I don't, and I'm thinking it's a matter of sequence of operation.
Sure.
Can you tell me anything about that?
Sure. Well, target disk mode is not something that's going to be an ongoing thing. It just lets you it's not something you get to use. Let me back up here. What target disk mode does, you start up your, let's say your G4, you hold down the T key as you start it up, and basically the whole computer turns into a giant and somewhat expensive external hard drive.
And how long do I hold that T?
Until you see this purple screen with a yellow symbol start floating around on the display. Once you see that big icon start floating around on the screen, then you know you're in target disk mode. So once you've done this, now your computer, it's not really something you can sit down and use anymore, but you can plug it into your iMac. And what you want to do is you want to use FireWire.
Mm-hmm.
This is not USB. It's specifically FireWire.
Okay.
So you plug in a FireWire cable in one of the ports on your G4, and you plug it into your iMac. And when you do this, the hard drive in your G4 is now going to show up on your iMac.
Okay.
And then you can move files back and forth, whatnot. And then when you're done, you disconnect the cable, you restart your G4, and now your G4 is back to its normal self, and your iMac is back to its normal self.
Great. Yeah, simple enough, and that's all I need, is that simple.
Yeah,
I have one more question. Is old software, again, can I run, say, DesignCAD, you know, which is an older CAD program, on my new iMac?
Depends on how old the program is, and basically you have to give it a try. If it's something that requires Mac OS 9, if it's that old, no, your new iMac will not run Mac OS 9. Mm-hmm. Apple gave that up with Mac OS 10.5, and they gave it up with the Intel chips. So if it's something on your G4 that you see the classic environment, you see the OS 9 program start up first, nope, you're out of luck there. If it does run in Mac OS 10, you can give it a try, but sometimes the older programs don't work really well. It might work mostly, but there'll be a couple of loose edges. You know, give it a try and find out. It won't hurt anything.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks
but
for...
You'd think, though, that it would be just such a simple left-handed little thing for the 10 to run the the older program. Then I'll hang up. But can you explain why the old stuff don't run on the new, which I think would be so grainy? You know?
The quick answer to that with the Mac OS 9 programs. Mac OS 9 it didn't know anything about the Intel chips, and a lot of it was written so specifically for the chips that Apple had been using for years and years and years that to try and rewrite it for Intel chips was basically, that's why we never went to Intel chips before this, because it was such a Herculean task that Apple literally had to throw everything away and start over. That's why Mac OS X, even on an older machine, has this classic compatibility environment, because it was basically a clever hack by Apple to keep all of that old software alive for a little bit longer. But at some point, the overhead of trying to support that just got too expensive, and it was going to slow them down from making some of the new advances that they have been able to make.
There you have it. Thanks, Don, for calling. Steve and Elma, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Say, I've got a question on a printer. It sends up a message that our ink cartridges are empty or need to be changed.
Okay.
And we go ahead and change them, and we still get that popping up saying that we have to change our cartridges. Can you explain why?
No, I can't. The first thing I do is when that window pops up, if you've got a button anywhere that says Utilities, possibly, and I don't know exactly which kind of printer you have, but usually... You've got a Canon, so hopefully Canon has some utilities that you can run that will tell you, you know, what's going on with the printer, how much ink is there, whether you can clean the heads, things like that. And possibly there's a button there that says rescan, so it can go and ask the printer again, okay, no, really, how much ink do you have? And hopefully it'll actually report per tank how much ink is there. So, you know, maybe the black is full, but the red is almost out, or the green is full, but the blue is almost out. There's no green ink, but I'm making stuff up now. But you kind of get what I'm talking about. You know, perhaps it's needs to be refreshed, or maybe there is one tank that's not full. Short of that, it sounds like the printer isn't telling the Mac really what is going on when it's supposed to.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And we have Billy in Winona, Minnesota, who says, I'd like to have my iPhoto open in one of the albums rather than the library. Can I change that? I'm running iPhoto 5 version 5.0.4 on a G5 OS 10.4.11.
I'm not sure that you can get that specific. I don't know that you can open up into a specific iPhoto album. Like I said, it's kind of a gentleman's agreement where it's supposed to open up the last place you left off, but it's entirely up to the specific application to do that. And yeah, I'm pretty sure that every version of iPhoto I've ever encountered always opens up by default into the library. So, sorry.
Out of luck there. And we're not only out of luck, we're out of time.
Yikes. Goodbye fast.
Yeah. What's your website again, Joe?
It's joerodes.com/WPR.
So Joe, and Joe Rhodes is spelled R-H-O-D-E-S.
That's me.
And always a pleasure. You'll come back and do this again, I hope.
Certainly hope so. I love it.
All right. Thank you very much. Joe Rhodes, self-employed Macintosh support specialist, lives in Madison, works in Madison. He's been supporting Macs professionally since 1999. It was a real pleasure to have him, and he will be back with us again, and we'll talk some more with him about Macintosh computers and accessories. Sorry we didn't get to everybody, but... got a whole ton of emails here, but, you know, that's what happens. We'll do it. We'll do it again. Coming up tomorrow, it's Friday. That means another edition of Garden Talk, and we'll welcome Ed Lyon to the microphone. Ed directs Allen Centennial Gardens on the UW-Madison campus. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Net.